Dear Mary, colleagues and friends of Franz, coming somewhat later in the story, I thought I could save some time. If David can put back the slide that he's shown several times, then you would see that. Fine. Okay. So thank you very much for giving me this opportunity to tell you all how much I admired Franz, and in a strange sort of way to thank him for all he did for me. It's some 40 years ago now. Time goes quickly. It was as an undergraduate in the physics department that I guess I first saw Franz as a lecturer, but I really only met him when I was lucky enough to have him as my third year practical tutor. And as he was the head of the spark chamber group by then, you've heard of the spark chambers that Witt Boucher mentioned, it was perhaps not surprising that I had a project to detect and locate sparks with a microphone, in fact. As a third year student, I failed, of course, to come up with some new way of building spark chambers and reading out spark chambers, but I did, I'm very pleased to say, succeed in convincing Franz that I could join his research group and join the spark chamber group. So that was in 1963. At the time, as well as building spark chambers which were highly efficient, the group was actually running experiments at both the Rutherford Laboratory and at CERN in Geneva. And I have to say that I was lucky enough to be sent very early on to CERN Geneva. Travelling out to CERN at that time, to Geneva, by Couchette as a young research student, was not terribly pleasant, but it was terrific being able to interact with all the physicists at CERN. And there we were in contact with both the Spark Chamber Group, it was a Norwegian head of the Spark Chamber Group, Arne Lundby, and the Emulsion Group, because we were actually working on an idea which I believe was Eric Burrup's, which I'm sure was Eric Burrup's, which was to use spark chambers to locate the secondary particles from neutrino interactions in emulsion, nuclear emulsion, and that had never been done before. And we spent a long time living in what was called the neutrino shielding in the south hall of the PS. But for me, it was an introduction to physics, experimental physics, and a large number of very interesting people at CERN. CERN was just terrific. It was all possible, of course, because Franz's group had already worked at CERN, and as you've heard, had worked on the synchrocyclotron. Without that, it wouldn't have been possible. At the Rutherford lab, at that time, we were using the Pi 2 beam of Nimrod to study Pi P resonances. And this was the period when we all spent many hours in the middle of the night, in the middle of the day, at any time, driving backwards and forwards between London and Rutherford. There are many stories from that time, but most of them aren't very funny because they involved car accidents or car breakdowns. Most of us as students had cars which broke down more regularly than they arrived in one piece. But there was one story which is certainly not very funny for Marie at the time, but Franz never hesitated to tell stories against himself. And one of his stories was the time when, after a long day at the Rutherford, he got back home and he wondered, where on earth is Marie? And then he remembered. She'd set out with him that morning for a day's shopping in Oxford, and yes, he'd totally forgotten that he was supposed to pick her up. Now, that was, of course, well before the days of mobile phones. At the end of the 60s, the Spark Chamber Group started to work at CERN again, this time an experiment they were planning for the intersecting storage rings. And the intersecting storage rings, there was a proposal which was known as the British Muon Experiment. This was accepted, and in collaboration with Rutherford Laboratories group of Jeff Manning, and one or two other British universities. We were joined by a whole experiment's worth of Scandinavians to go and work at the ISR. And I was sent out as the contact man for this experiment. It was the British-Scandinavian collaboration, which was in fact responsible for two experiments, each side of IR2, intersection region 2. The wide-angle spectrometer, which if I'm not mistaken was built by Liverpool University in the dockyard, was measuring the high amount of transverse momentum particles on one side of the interaction region, and we were looking for muon pairs on the other side. First collisions at the ISR were obtained 2 years after I was sent out as contact man. I still don't know how I managed to stay there for 2 years. So this was early in 71. And in fact, the photograph, David, if you can advance one. This photograph was taken in July 1971 in IR2 of the ISR. As I say, I was the contact man. Franz, of course, was coming out for a progress report. The experiment is at the top of the experiment, the photograph. I've cut off most of the ISR and the wide-angle spectrometer on the right. So I think you can see, Franz, you can at least see that my hair has changed colour since. Most of the UCL group were coming and going regularly by that time. Brian Duff, Harry Watson, Stuart Sharrock, any more, Roland Rosner. It was during one of these visits to Anne and I in our little apartment in Meyrin that over drinks, Franz and Brian, who were going to have dinner with the British delegate to the CERN Council, I guess it was the chairman of the SERC or something similar, Brian was very worried. What on earth were they going to talk about all evening with a mathematician? And it was Franz who immediately said, "We can always recite the 17 times table." He was always great company. The muon part of the ISR experiment, to be quite honest, was not a great success. The hoped-for muon pairs signaling the intermediate vector boson were not found simply because the ISR was far too low in energy. But it was a wonderful introduction to me to collaborative physics, to large experiments, to meeting an enormous number of people. And for me, Franz will always stand out as a leading physicist among many. I remember presenting a paper on the luminosity at the ISR at a conference when a very eminent Scandinavian, and remember I was a young postgrad at the time, stood up and objected to the standard formula for the luminosity in terms of the machine parameters that I was showing was in fact wrong. And it was the sine of the crossing angle of the beams and not the tangent, which should be on the right-hand side of the equation. Chaos reigned, and it turned out it was about 50-50 in the room as to who believed it was sine and who believed it was the tangent of the angle. But it was Franz who next morning gave me half a dozen neatly handwritten sheets in which he derived the formula, the original one, and I'm happy to say the one I was showing, from first principles. That was such a wonderfully clear derivation of the luminosity of the ISR that I used it on many occasions after. Thank you, Franz.
Was it sine or was it tan?
It was tan. The wide-angle spectrometer did some solid high transverse momentum physics, however, and much more important for me, I'd been launched into a career, a very satisfying career, as a support physicist at CERN. It's clear that I think I have Franz to thank for that. He taught me a lot of physics. He taught me much more about the importance and delight of taking interest in everything. And I think that has been very clear from the talks you've already heard. The website indicates some more of them. And his interests, Franz's interests, knew no bounds, and neither did his kindness. He will always be remembered.